on Triple J.
God, it's a good day to be you.
Ah, podcasts, podcasts, podcasts. What a wonderful world.
Here's your sound effect, Lewis. Would you like a clue?
Is it someone tipping out a bottle of water?
No way. There's movement and action.
Someone having a shower?
No.
Washing their hands?
Yes.
Well, I thought I could hear a little crinkle of plastic.
Correctamundo.
Feels good. I feel clean.
Yeah, God, so many reasons to use that sound effect, isn't there? Which is so happy to have that in the archive.
Eventually, we need to go back, get all the sound effects that you've done at the start of podcasts and make some sort of audio play.
I'd love to make a radio play. That's actually one of my secret fantasies.
Next week's podcast. Tune in for the audio play. This week, though, tune in for Kingswood. A delightful band of guys out of Melbourne, and they're touring around with AC/DC at the moment, and we asked them to do a tour diary of their very first night, and it got loose.
Yeah,
really loose.
The look on their faces as it went to air was that they just didn't know what was happening and couldn't remember a lot of it.
Yeah, and you can hear why, but it's very fun.
Rudimental had a chat with us about coming here later this month and also about We The Generation, their album, which we haven't had much of a chance to talk about, and all the amazing features on it, including Bobby Womack.
Yeah, so beautiful to hear Amir from Rudimental's story about that, which you'll hear in a sec. Also, Joel McHale, who you would know from Community. He plays Jeff Winger. You might also know him from this. Winger from The Soup. He's in the country and he gave us a call. Tell us, well, let's be honest, I mostly just talked to him about the X-Files because he's in the new X-Files.
Which you can hear.
I'm Lewis so excited about.
Speaking of spooky things, it was the wash up from Halloween, and we were hearing about costumes that have kind of screwed people over.
Oh, man, you got to be careful.
Some dangerous stuff, particularly long lasting. That was the biggest effect, which, you know, it's a valuable lesson to be learned.
And lastly, you'll hear from a man that is described as the Jon Stewart of the Middle East, a comedian called Bassem Youssef. He's a really fascinating guy who started a TV show in Egypt. He was arrested by the Egyptian president. His show's been shut down, and now he's sort of touring the world talking about his experience. He's an incredible guy.
What would you call, like, Jon Stewart if no one knew who he was?
What do you mean?
I guess, like, the Sean McAuliffe of America, or the Charlie Pickering of America. Pickering, probably.
Yeah. We'll run it by Charlie, see what he says.
He'll love it.
He'll love that.
Triple J.
Put your headphones on, baby.
With Veronica and Lewis.
From Kingswood's amazing album, Microscopic Wars, and we've got Fergus and Alex from the band in the studio
Hello.
With us.
Hello.
Hello, everybody.
How are you guys doing?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, feeling good?
Great. Feeling great, yes.
Great. Thank you for lying. You guys did your first support show for AC/DC last night. How are you feeling?
Well, it's usually you try and keep yourself in check when you're playing a normal show. I'm usually gone about 10:30 or something. We're done by 7.
Yeah.
So then you just watch the Hives and AC/DC and drink a lot.
Oh, nice. So you've got a bunch of shows yet to come, but you've been traveling a lot recently. You're at CMJ, which seemed to be really good. It's the festival in New York.
Yeah.
It seemed like you got a great reception there.
We had a wonderful reception and we met a lot of wonderful people. One particularly.
Yeah, you have a cheeky face on.
There's always some cheeky stuff.
Of course.
But there was this one guy we met, Richard, Mr. Richard Grable. He's this little character who told me his life story, and his life story is very, very entertaining.
Are you going to tell the whole life story
right
now?
Can you condense it?
Mm.
Well, it took 3 hours.
Oh, shit.
When he told it to me. Basically, he was the first correspondent for NME in America. And then, in his words, he's like, "My Jewish parents were at the back of my head saying, 'Well, you got to go back to school, boy.'" And I was just, and he was like, so as he went back to school, he continued to write for NME. Became really good friends with The Clash. And Joe Strummer was like, "Well, here are my impersonations for the day." "Well, you know, Richard, you know, our lawyer is not, he's not doing so good. So we need some help." And then Richard was like, "Well, you know."
These Jewish accents are borderline, I reckon.
"Well, yeah."
I don't know what's going on.
He was like, "Well, yeah, there's an opportunity for me here." Anyway, so then he studied
law.
Is this
the short version?
This is the short version. Then he studied law. And went on to represent, like, Billy Joel, Madonna, and the Lumineers.
That's the big three. Billy Joel, Madonna, the Lumineers.
What's the future of you guys going to be?
He's going to be our lawyer.
Hopefully, yeah. We'll see. Yeah.
Actually?
Yeah.
Mm. Oh.
Imagine having that guy as your lawyer.
What a pitch.
What a pitch. Well, he's like, you know.
Well, I could listen to you do accents all day, but the other But the other thing you guys have put out is a deluxe version of your album Microscopic Wars, and a new song just premiered on Monday. Dom,
we didn't even, we were having a Thai meal all together, yeah, celebrating the AC/DC beginning, and then it popped up and on the phones.
We had no idea.
Got very excited.
So that's Vlad, and then there's Baby Doll as well. Mm. Where did these songs come from? You were just holding on to them?
From the inner depths of my mind.
All right.
Yeah, we just had them. And
that's true.
We're doing a new record next year, and we feel like these won't fit on that, or that'll be a whole new batch of things. So,
well, and then the AC/DC thing happened, and then we had to print more CDs. So we're like, why don't we celebrate everything in one Christmas bundle?
Great.
And there's live tracks as well.
We play.
Yeah, from the forum shows. Mm.
Well, we want to hear your backstage diary that we asked you to record for us.
I haven't heard this yet. Ooh,
yeah, it's a wild time that we asked you to record last night at the AC/DC concert.
Surely you knew when you asked us to do this that it would become what it is.
We definitely
had
did.
A hunch. Mm. Yeah. And we are joined by Fergus and Alex from Kingswood, who are doing some shows with AC/DC at the moment. Just a couple of cheeky shows with the childhood heroes. Yeah. No big deal.
I tell you what, though, watching them do what they do is incredibly entertaining. Like, I thought it was kind of going to maybe be, this is very rude to say, but I thought it was maybe going to be a little bit shit. Because inevitably.
These things are sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. Yeah. I remember seeing James Brown and having a similar experience just before he passed away. And I was like, I love, this is going to be amazing. Yeah. And
AC/DC aren't going to die.
We're bringing up examples of people on their last days. They're not at all.
Sorry, that was the wrong comparison.
But they were like, we just couldn't, it was insane.
They're like kids, how much energy they have on stage.
So did you guys used to be an AC/DC tribute band? Yeah. Is that how it started?
Not.
No, we were pretty much. I convinced this lady to give us a gig that because I had enough original material, which is a complete lie. There was none. We went out there and we just played AC/DC songs.
You should just do an AC/DC cover in your set before they come on. See how it goes down.
That'll go down well.
Crowd would actually probably love it.
Kicked off the tour and people would probably throw things at us.
Well, let's hear the audio diaries now. We set Kings with a task of compiling an audio diary backstage at AC/DC. And are you guys ready to listen to it?
Yes.
Do we need any warnings or anything?
Probably. I don't even know.
I just remember us going, you got to do audio. Messages, got to do audio messages. Yeah. So I don't know what it's going to sound like.
All right,
let's see how it goes. This is Kingswood backstage at AC/DC last night on Triple J.
Day one on the AC/DC tour backstage.
We've got the stage to our left. It's very big. It's a lot of Marshall stackery. It's wet. It kind of smells like wet dogs. So far, lady just walked past me with a bunch of towels, offered me one. I'm currently dry, so I don't need one. I can see the Hives on stage. They're all dressed in leather. They look great. Just in the lift, travelling to what seems to be the most amazing catering room of all time. Got a lovely selection of garlic bread, lots of salads, lots of cold meats, a hot meat, Café de Paris minute steak, ooh, chocolate cake, Coca-Cola chocolate cake, lemon poppy seed cake, tan squares, apricot flatjacks, double Dutch chocolate chips. Can you explain the present situation to the listeners of Triple J?
Unsurprisingly, I've locked the keys in the van again.
Which keys?
Which keys?
Yeah.
All the keys.
So we have two vans, both of which have a set of keys.
Yep, and they're both very safe at the moment.
Both locked in, one of the vans.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any access to the keys?
Not at the moment.
That's good.
Is this the first time it's happened?
No, of course not. I'm very consistent.
Thanks for the update. Thank you.
Jimmy.
So that's your manager, tour manager?
No.
No, it's my cousin.
Just some guy who keeps locking the
keys. My cousin. He's been Alex's guitar tech for a couple of years now.
Attempted guitar tech.
We just we love him so much. He keeps stuffing up. We just can't get rid of him.
Well, you guys did get a little bit stuck into Jimmy later on. I don't know how
this is like many hours later. And we're joined in the studio by Fergus and Alex from Kingswood. We've just heard their audio diaries of being backstage at AC/DC, who they're supporting on a big tour around at the moment. Played Sydney last night, a very wet Sydney, actually.
You guys did get to a situation where Jimmy, your guitar tech slash cousin, had locked the keys in the car. This is how many times now?
Oh, he's done it heaps. Once we had to go to Bunnings and buy a
metal detector
and walk on the beach looking for the
I lost the keys in the sand. And like, this is legit. It's not a made up story.
So this next part of the tour diary is kind of how late at night.
We all went to Frankie's and Jimmy didn't. And so then obviously when we came back to the hotel, all of us went in there. And we wanted Jimmy to speak on the voice recorder thing. So that's why we were listening.
This goes for about 15 minutes. We might just play.
Don't play the whole thing. But can I just say at the end, yeah. I think you need to know that I have very bruised ribs right now.
Oh, okay, good teaser. let's hear it.
Jimmy.
Give me some.
Do you want some rum and rum raisin? Jimmy, did you feel bad because you lost your pass and you got yelled at by the AC/DC people and because you locked both van keys in one van? He's not talking to
me. He's not saying a word.
Is he dead?
He's dead. Jimmy, you're a dead man.
Okay, spoiler. Did Jimmy ever wake up?
Yes.
Oh, no. Did he ever say anything?
He was furious. I've never seen him.
He beat the shit out of me.
He just said one word. It just like it ran on for I don't know how long.
Oh, he's awake.
Oi! Oi! It's not me, mate! Oi, Jimmy! It's not just me, mate.
He got up and he was like, he just said, unacceptable. And just started beating the shit out of Ferg. Like,
and the rest of the guys who were all on top of him doing the same thing, I was just left.
Everyone was like, leave the cousins to it. This is a family matter.
Oh, how's he feeling today? Is he okay?
Oh, he's fine. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, I slept in a bed with him.
Oh, that's very sweet. It's
fine.
Well, I can't thank you enough for recording those audio diaries.
Really sorry.
You did perfectly.
That was amazing. This is incredible. You guys are doing shows tonight at the Cambridge Hotel in Newcastle, then Waves in Wollongong on Friday, then doing some more AC/DC shows in Sydney, doing AC/DC shows in Queensland, oh, God, Adelaide, Perth, Melbourne, and then doing some more of your own shows on the 27th of November, Jackrabbit Slims in WA, and then you're doing Beyond the Valley Festival.
Beyond the Valley.
Which is going to be fun for New Year's.
That'll be awesome. Can't wait.
And then are you moving back to the States? Are you moving there?
Yeah, go and do our second record.
This is pretty exciting, because you mentioned before when you were saying the songs that you put onto the deluxe thing weren't going to fit on your new record. Why do you reckon that is? Like, what's the thinking there?
I mean, it's the album needs to be a little family of songs that are all like together. They can't be sort of years apart or anything like that. So I think that those songs were in the realm of the old...
The bridging. They were in the bridging.
They were in the bridging.
I'll tell you why. This is what I think. I've said to people, not that this is going to be the case, but I have said, and people are going to get very shocked, that I don't care if there was not one guitar on the next album.
What?
I was just like, so long as the songs are great and it sounds great, then that's all that matters.
So is that happening though? It's not happening.
There's going to be a lot of guitar. But the point, it's more the approach. It's more the psychology is what I'm getting.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Fergus and Alex, for joining us on Triple J.
No problem.
Thank you for having us.
That was a pleasure.
Everything else you need to know about the Melbourne Cup.
The Melbourne Cup was originally a desperate and dateless ball. There was no horse racing at all. That's why the racing world is so full of tiny men and older women.
The main thing that separates horse racing from other Australian sports is that there are never any sex scandals, which is weird, because racing has a lot of whips, leather, and a designated mounting yard.
Some people think the Melbourne Cup is cruel, but that's because the cup itself has handles that a horse's hooves can't drink from. Even if a horse wins, it can't celebrate properly. Let's make the cup a solid gold trough. That'll make everyone happy.
It's Veronica and Lewis on Triple J.
And Rudimental are going to be in the country later this month. And we've got Amir from the London Group on the phone with us right now. How you going, Amir?
Yo, how you doing? I'm very good.
Oh, cool. You guys have got a few more shows before you're back in Australia. Are you in London at the moment?
Yeah, in London at the moment. We just did a new video and working on some music, actually. It's nice to be in the studio for a bit. And also, you know, get a bit of family time in, and that is pretty rare these days.
It seems relentless. You guys never seem to stop writing.
Yeah. I mean, we write on the road. Whenever we tour, sometimes we've got a studio tour bus that we take with us, or we write in pretty much anywhere we can in sound checks and things like that. This is just, it's part of the fun, you know. We're a proper live band. So, you know, we actually get to try out songs and change them around and do different things. It's not so much based around sort of computers and things like that. They do come in later and they're very helpful. But, yeah, so we've got a kind of freedom like that. It's a good way of working.
And because you've had your studio, Major Tom's, for a while, but you've also sort of got a bit of a record label now, right? Working kind of out of there.
Yeah. So Major Tom's is pretty much the launch pad for all of our music now. It kind of started off as a way of signing our singers. On the first album, we had Ella Eyre and John Newman. We discovered an array of singers and musicians. You know, we still work with them, but they're all kind of doing their own thing. So, yeah, Major Tom's is kicking off. It's the new aspects of Rudimental.
So, yeah, you did kind of launch those sort of careers for people like John Newman. Do you have a lot of people pitching to do vocal work on this next album?
Pitching, yeah. I mean, like, we go out to different places. I mean, just a few weeks ago, Locksmith met some girl working in a cafe who just happened to be a wicked singer, and he basically just recorded her singing on the phone while he was having his breakfast at a cafe, and then send it to us. And, you know, this is kind of just, we keep an eye out everywhere, really. We're a sucker for a soulful voice. So, yeah, we do get sent a lot of music, but it's kind of part of the Rudimental mentality, really. It's kind of like a school of music. You know, we bring through a lot of young musicians, singers and things like that, and they tour with us and basically get exposed to playing to thousands of people sometimes. And, you know, we like to think of it as a sort of Motown, even though it wasn't necessarily intended that way at the beginning. It's kind of become that way.
It's the Rudimentality. I can't believe you didn't go for that. I mean, it was a slam dunk.
Yeah.
You must get trapped,
I will, next time,
occasionally by people who are just like, sit down, I'm going to do a 10-minute freestyle for you, and you just have to sort of go, oh, and sit through it.
Oh, mate. Oh, do you know what happened to me? I think it was in Melbourne. And you don't want to be rude, you know, it's like, yeah, cool, thanks, that was nice. But I was, I was at a festival, it was actually backstage, and I couldn't get away from this girl who just decided to rap at me for bloody ages, and I couldn't really stop her. There's actually another guy who we've been working with a few times, Ed Sheeran, who you probably heard of. He loves doing that as well. He loves to just rap at you for like 15 minutes, and you just can't get him to shut up sometimes.
Oh, wow. You have Dizzy Rascal in there rapping. You should have had a bit of Ed Sheeran too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we'll probably do something like that. Yeah.
And we are joined by Amir from Rudimental. And you guys are coming here next month. What does your live setup look like at the moment?
Man, our live setup, for people that haven't seen Rudimental live, it's a big performance. There's actually 12 of us on stage. Horn section, live drums, three different singers, us four playing our instruments. It's kind of like Sly and the Family Stone or Funkadelic, but from UK underground music culture.
So we were reading somewhere that there was a chance you might be trying to discover some local talent to sing on stage with you. Was that a lie or true?
No, it's not a lie. I mean, we put it out there. We'd love to work with people in all the places that we go. It's just, yeah, the idea is if we put it out there, hopefully they'll come, you know.
So how would people, like, get you? Would they just in a cafe, like we were talking about before?
Yeah, just, do you know what? I mean, people find their way, man. I mean, I had to worm my way into so many different music kind of scenarios before Rudimental, and it's just how it works. If you've got the will and you've got the drive and you've got the talent and you're persistent with it, then you'll eventually get through and we'll hear about you some way or another, really.
Yeah, well, one of the most incredible guest vocalists on We The Generation is Bobby Womack, total soul legend, yeah. And he did Die last year. How was it recording with him?
That was amazing. I mean, I was on the tour bus in Arizona, and the tour bus had broken down. We had a studio in the back of the bus, and I was trying to work on music, but I couldn't really do anything. And we got an email from Bobby's wife, and sadly, he passed away. But one of his requests was that we finish a song idea that he had started. And I played it out of the speakers. I had this guitar riff that I was messing around with from many years before, really. I think it's before even joining Rudimental, I was playing with this riff. It happened to be in the same key and the same tempo as the vocal. And that became the song called New Day on our new album. So it's kind of even thinking about it now, it's kind of an emotional experience because the lyrics, the emotiveness of what he's saying and the song was so relevant to me and to us at that time. And, you know, from the man, the legend, to give us such a responsibility to work on his last song was immense, really. And I think that's probably going to stay with me forever, really.
Yeah, it's a powerful moment in the album. Another really powerful part of it is the music video that you guys made for A Will for Love, which is sort of the story illegal immigration from Mexico across to the US. And from the YouTube page, you guys can sort of get across to Amnesty International's website. Was that something that you guys thought was really important to talk about on this album?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I was an immigrant. You know, I came to this country. I was a refugee and I escaped a war. And I didn't really go to school until I was really old and couldn't speak English. I went through all of these things. And actually, as a kid, you don't really get affected by what's happening around you. You get affected by the response and the emotions of your parents. And so the kind of struggle that I experienced was actually through them and through the difficulties that my mum went through to try and bring me here and to give me a better life. You know, as a musician, I would have been utterly repressed where I came from. So talking with these kids, basically, that I met along the way called IO Youth, I spoke to them about my story and about trying to integrate it. And this is before the kind of immigration thing, I don't know about over there, but over here recently, there's a big hoo-ha about it. Mm. So it kind of coincided with that in a funny way without intentionally thinking about that. So we put together this narrative about not just immigration, but about the lengths that people would go to for their loved ones to give them hope and a chance for a better life. And the thought that really worked with I Will For Love, which is, you know, we're doing this for the love, even though it's difficult sometimes. It's a kind of expression of that.
Yeah, it's really great. If you haven't seen it yet, I Will For Love, you should definitely look at it on YouTube. Amir from Rudimental, thank you so much for chatting to us. We can't wait to see you later this month on the 27th of November in Brisbane, the 1st of December in Metro City in Perth, 8th of December at the Forum Theatre in Melbourne, which is sold out, that one actually, and the 10th of December at the Enmore, which is also sold out. Also VanFest alongside Peking Duck and Sticky Fingers in Forbes in Central New South Wales in December 4. Yeah, lovely to chat to you.
Thank you. Thanks for supporting our music. We love you guys. Triple J is the best.
Awesome. So I'll talk to you again very soon.
Nice one, man. Cheers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sex tip of the week.
Sex tip of the week.
Now it's time for another sex tip of the week brought to you by
opposition leader Bill Shorten. Oh yeah, oh
yeah. Grab the growth engine.
Sex tip of the week.
You're with Veronica and Lewis. Veronica, very attentive. Lewis, madly Googling whether you can hook up your second cousin.
Yeah, it's a murky one. The best I can find is on answers.com. Can you marry your second cousin in Australia? Someone said, yes, you can. And then it says 19 others found this useful. So there are at least 19 people out there jonesing for their second cousin.
Yeah, someone said, second cousins that aren't blood related, of course they can hook up. Come on, Triple J, don't be so judgmental and conservative.
I take it back. I just didn't know. I heard the words cousin and hook up in a sentence and I panicked.
Yeah, well, yeah, you were right too. And also, it depends if they're blood related or not, really. Amy from Ballarat, your mum, your parents hooked you up, set you up with someone. Tell us about it.
I was travelling a long time ago initially with my parents. I went to the Uffizi, they went to the laundromat, came back and my mother said, I've got something to tell you. I assumed she'd ruined my clothes, but no. She'd met an Australian guy travelling with his dad. They thought we should have some time away from the parents. And he arrived about 3 minutes later.
Oh.
At the door and walked in, said hi to my mum like they were old mates. I had a very strong limoncello at that point, a very large one. But it was actually quite fun.
Oh, that's
wow.
Good.
You know, the weirdest, grossest thing about that story is that really they wanted to have sexy time by themselves. Don't you reckon?
No, I can't even think about that.
Sorry. Veronica can't stop talking about mums hooking up today. It's front of mind for her. So how did it go with you, Amy?
Yeah, we had fun, but the irony was that I got back at about 4 a.m. and they were not very happy with me. And I was like, but you set me up. It's your fault I went out. You should be happy I went out and had such a good time.
Yeah, gosh, that's so funny. Well, thanks, Amy. Have you ever talked to him again? Is it a continual thing?
No, I think that was better left as just a one-off, but it was a funny story.
Just an Italian fling. Good to have one of those in the belt.
Thanks, Amy. And Will from Naruma, tell us your story.
While I was at uni at Wollongong, I think it was New Year's Eve, so a couple of the guys and I were having a bit of a shindy, get a house there. And pretty early in on the arvo, we noticed there were some girls doing the same thing. You know, might have been five or six of us and about the same as them across the road. And being bashful guys, we didn't go over and say hi, as you do. And early in the night, one of their mums was kind of walking past and kind of grabbed me on the hand and said, come on, you've got to go say hello, and kind of dragged me over and introduced me to one of the girls, which I assumed was her mum. And we kind of hung out, and the parties combined, and we kind of hung out a couple of hours. It might have been an hour or two later. One of the girls said, oh, you're so lame for getting your mum to bring you over. And I went, well, hang on a second. That wasn't my mum. And it turned out that neither of the groups knew her. It was just a lady that lived in the area just wandering past.
Wow, a mystery matchmaking lady.
Yeah.
A drive-by matchmaking.
Yeah, it was good times. So everyone had a good time. But no one actually knew her. Oh. I think the guy's house was staying at, who wasn't there at the time, I think he knew her or she knew him. But he wasn't around to kind of let us know about that at the time. So, it all worked out okay, though.
Well, what a great twist. I wonder how often she just goes around doing that.
Have you ever seen her again?
Since then, we noticed she walks past, I think, every day. So since then, whenever I was there, I'd seen her, but this is a few years ago now. So.
You got to get her a present, a thank you gift, Will. She sorted you out.
Just constantly lurking around, waiting. That was like Christmas to her.
Making parties up, yeah.
Thanks, Will.
Veronica and Lewis present Science with Dr. Carl Stefanovic.
What's up, nerds? Dr. Carl Stefanovic here. A young lady came up to me as I was burning around in the convertible and she yelled out, Dr. Carl, is there a scientific equation for making love? I drove away without saying anything because I don't give answers for free. I've got several families to feed in four different countries. But the answer is yes, there is an equation for making love. X plus X plus X plus X plus X plus X equals heaps of X's. Say it out loud. X, 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 X. See? You just had sex. And that's bloody science.
Triple J with Veronica and Lewis.
And you are also joined by a man you may know as part of Ballpark Music, or you might know him from his solo project, My Own Pet Radio, Sam Cromack. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Australia.
Good afternoon on this Melbourne Cup Day. How do you feel about Cup Day?
Well, I don't really want to get massively embroiled in a...
A fan, clearly, that pregnant pause would suggest.
But, yeah, no, I'm not a fan. And I don't really necessarily want to take, like, a moral high ground kind of approach. I think it just generally is a bit sucky.
Yeah. What have you been doing today, then?
Oh, just been at home playing the drums.
Oh, yeah? Practicing for yourself, or...?
Yeah, just general self-improvement.
What are you working on? What's your area of improvement at the moment?
Well, there's heaps I could improve on the drum kit. I'm really not that good. I've got a few little rudiments my drummer friends have taught me, so working on those and annoying the neighbours.
So, because my own pet radio is just all you, right? Did you write everything and then get people in to record stuff, or did you do it a lot yourself?
Traditionally, the project was just a solo thing, and I would just do everything by myself. But in the past, I guess I would do like a lot of electronic drum beats and stuff. So it was kind of easier for me to do the rest of the instruments because I'm certainly more proficient on like guitars and keys and singing and that kind of stuff. But this time around, I really wanted to incorporate a lot more acoustic drumming because... You know, drums is definitely the instrument I've fallen in love with the most since kind of, you know, finishing school and stopping getting tuition on guitar and stuff like that. So, yeah, I definitely wanted to have a lot of drumming on the record. So I kind of got a really nice mix of awesome drumming from all my drummer friends. Daniel from Ballpark played on a couple of songs, and Ryan Strathy, who plays with Holy Holy, used to play with Hungry Kids. He played on some songs, and then another good friend of mine, his name's Alex Lestrange, he played on a few tracks as well, and he mixed the record too, so it's got lots of Brisbane drummers on it.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a real dream team.
Yeah.
And you record that in like your own studio, do you?
Everyone uses the word studio, but I feel a bit uncomfortable about that. It's just a room in my house with a desk and instruments in it, but I guess that's all a studio really is. So.
Well, we're excited to hear from you a couple of weeks back via text message. It's always fun when artists text into the Triple J text line, because when we had John Ronson on talking about his book, he was explaining all about social media and how things... Everyone's so judgy. Here's a little bit of it.
We are constantly committing these, you know, ridiculously uncompassionate acts. And instead of a world of curiosity and empathy and compassion, which is the world that actually we do want, we're lurching towards a surveillance society of cold, hard judgment.
And Sam, you texted in saying you were quite inspired by his book for this album.
Yeah, well, I really, really like John Ronson's books. I always talk about how I'm such a bad reader. It kind of makes me sad. When I was younger, I used to read books a lot more, and now I rarely finish one, especially fiction. So, John Ronson is one of the few authors where I kind of actually get to the end of the book, which feels like an achievement in itself. But his new book... what's it called? Far Out. The one that he was just talking about. Have you got the name of it? I'm going blank.
So You've Been Publicly Shamed?
That's the one. So You've Been Publicly Shamed. My girlfriend bought it and I just hooned through it. And I really liked, what he was talking about people kind of, making errors, especially online in videos or tweets and stuff. And sure, often they were saying something that was lousy or uninformed or whatever, but the backlash that these people sometimes copped was brutal and, you know, wrecked their lives and was, you know, unwarranted most of the time. And that the song on the record called Don't Press Send, Companion was, directly inspired by the book. I just wanted to have a song that just sort of said, you know, because I guess I was in a real anti-technology kind of mood too when I was making the album. So I just kind of like the idea of telling people to just, you know, put your phone or your laptop or whatever away. Don't press send. Just don't say anything. Just, you know, go do something else. Go outside or whatever.
Anti-technology, even though it's got lots of samples and synths.
well, let's say like social media or social technology more than recording technology, which is the greatest gift of all time.
Talk to us about Goodlum, the name of the album.
Well, when I record, I always try to, especially if I'm mucking around with something that doesn't have any singing yet, it's just music, And if I save that session on the computer, I'll always try and give it a name instead of calling it, you know, like Sam's idea number 500 or whatever. That way I feel like I'm putting like a magical spell on the song, you know, so it's getting an identity of some sort. And when I come back to it, you know, I'll finish it off. It's all very superstitious, but the song Goodlum, that's what I called it. Often it's just a pun I think of on the spot when I'm pressing save. So I called that song Goodlum. Finished it off. And then later I was thinking, well, I really like that word Goodlum, and yeah, punched it into Google to see if it was already a thing. And there was like an Urban Dictionary entry. I feel like there's an Urban Dictionary entry for everything, though.
Yeah, yeah. You just jam any kind of like random order of letters in, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, that's a thing. It's a sexual move in Mexico.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, sure. It's always got something to do with balls or something.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I guess I was typing it in with my fingers crossed, like, please, not a sex move.
You're going to do some shows, which is very, very exciting, but you've been, you know, touring around Europe and doing huge shows in Australia with Ballpark Music. How long has it been since you've done sort of more intimate venues?
I guess we get to do that in Europe with Ballpark Music. I think lots of people assume that we're going over there and, you know, conquering the world because we do big shows here, but it's certainly not the case. We're doing like pretty small clubs over there, often playing to you know, under 200 people, and it really is awesome. I think most musicians will agree, even if they performed, you know, in really big theaters or festivals, which, you know, is cool too. But yeah, performing in small clubs is really something else, and there's something, I don't know, I can't put my finger on exactly what it is, but it's very enjoyable.
Did you ever think about using any of the Ballpark Music guys in the band that you'd take around live?
Oh, it certainly crossed my mind because, you know, we spend so much time together and I've played so much music with them. So naturally when I think like, oh, who plays guitar or who plays drums, I immediately think of them. But I definitely, in my mind, made that, you know, a rule. It would be kind of too weird to have this other project. And, you know, I'm in it. I'm also singing. I'm also playing guitar and I'm writing songs. And then, oh, you know, surprise, like, here's the band as well. Like, I don't know, be too much inbreeding.
Yeah, sure. James from Brisbane, you've got a question for Sam.
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
I'm a big fan of both Ballpark and My Impact Radio, and I was just wondering, how do you find doing all the recording yourself, as you said, without the rest of the Ballpark? Did you enjoy that creative experience of having control of absolutely everything?
Yeah, for sure. And that's not to say that I don't feel like that when I record with Ballpark or whatever, but that's just, you know, the kind of joy of recording solo and probably why lots of people want to do it in some capacity. It's so nice to sit there and, you know, you work really fast because you make decisions by yourself and you go down sort of roads that perhaps you wouldn't go down when you're working in, you know, a group. But, you know, the flip side is the massive anxiety attacks I have when I think, you know, I haven't made anything good. I think when I was trying to make Goodlum that I recorded like 3 full songs in a row, which I decided was shit when I finished them. So then, you know, my partner was coming home from work each day and I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm not going to get the record done. I'm a failure kind of thing, and yeah, I have to like pick myself up out of that on my own. But yeah.
There's less of a safety net, I guess. But
yeah, for sure. Like, you know, the other side of the coin is working with a group, which is awesome. You know, when things are going well, you pat each other on the back and smile and, you know, think about friendship. And then other time you hate each other's guts because you've got different creative ideas or whatever. So, you know, each thing has its own merit, I guess.
Yeah, but like 5 people having a panic attack is way worse than one. That is too crazy.
Thanks, I kind of like to watch that, 5 people just having a panic attack.
Let's talk about the supports, because you got some really fun people playing with you on the shows. Did you grab those, or were they just kind of people who were around?
I talked to management about, and the booking agent, saying like, I'd really love to get, you know, some of my friends on board for this tour. And then when, you know, I didn't have friends in certain cities or whatever, they sent through like a massive list of upcoming Australian acts. And I feel like because ballparks kind of occupied so much of my time in the last few years that it sort of sucks you out of that smaller local scene a little bit. Like before, like when Ballpark first began, I used to go out on weeknights a lot more in Brisbane and see all these local bands. And, you know, it's really cool to know them all and be sort of up to speed with what's going on. And I definitely have lost touch with that kind of scene. So it was really nice to go through, you know, tons of artists from Sydney and Melbourne especially and listen to their music. And in many cases, I hadn't heard it before and I was so blown away with everything I'd heard. I really, truly enjoyed doing that. And, yeah, the ones I picked out to come on the tour are awesome.
Yeah, well, Caitlin Park, Lanx, Machine Age are among them for the shows that are happening on Thursday, the 12th of November at Newtown Social Club, 14th of November at the Black Bear Lounge in Brisbane, and Northcote Social Club on the 21st of November. And just finally, Sam, any news on any new Ballpark Music songs?
Yeah, we're writing again now. I've got a playlist in my iTunes, which is getting pretty long. It's got lots and lots of ideas and songs in it. So, yeah, we're going to write until the end of the year and do a bit more at the start of the year and start thinking about recording a new record at the start of next year. But Paul's still backpacking in Romania or whatever. So if he makes it back to Australia, I guess there'll be keys on the album again.
Yeah, good.
Everything else you need to know about the Melbourne Cup.
The expression each way refers to a bet on both a win and a place. But it can also refer to the feeling Australians get when they've just liked a friend's Facebook post about animal cruelty before ducking off to chuck 20 bucks on Red Caddo.
I'll have it each way, thanks.
Lots of people think it's the race that stops the nation, but you should ask the racists. They'll tell you it's the Greeks, the Lebanese, the Iranians, Jews, Russians, or the Indians.
Australians love sport, any sport. It's the glue that holds this nation together, and that's why we celebrate the Melbourne Cup, a day that actually contributes to the glue industry.
You're with Veronica and Lewis this afternoon on Melbourne Cup Day, and a lot of people finding alternative things to do on Melbourne Cup Day. In fact, one person texted in, Palungi in Yarraville, says, I've been finishing an assignment all day and just stopped to have lunch and could hear my neighbours screaming with excitement. So I thought the race must have been on. That's the entire involvement I've had with the Melbourne Cup today.
Yeah, I know at Triple J, we didn't do it this year, but not most years we do a penguin cup, which is where we get little robot penguins and try to race them and give them sort of Arctic band pun names. That's our alternative to the cup. But, Jack, you've been running a very different alternative to the Melbourne Cup today.
Yeah, we had a shitting Shetland at the place I work. but just so happened that the shitting Shetland got a bit of stage fright today. And after feeding it all that food, it got a bit constipated and hasn't shit.
So basically people had the chance to bet on how many poos it would do.
Or what time?
No. So they actually set up like this little gated area and like a 24 little square block thing. Oh. And you bought a square for, I don't know what money, I think it was like nearly 50 or something, and waited for the pony to shit in that square. And it was walking around for about 2 hours and there was a lot of sniffing getting done and there was a couple of pees, but there was no shitting in the end and they've actually just cleared it away.
Oh, so could this have been a scam from the pub? Like it knew and now it gets to keep all the money?
Yeah, well, basically I'm just running down the road now with $1,400. Nah. I think what they're planning to do now is just pick a name out of the hat. I had this other suggestion that maybe they could get a drunk guy in that middle of the square, feed him a bunch of booze and then spin him around heaps and maybe he can walk and vomit to one of the squares.
That sounds far too close to the actual Melbourne Cup.
Yeah. I think at least it's better than watching him poo somewhere, which would be weird.
Yeah, that would be kind of weird.
But there is money getting donated to charities, right?
Yeah, there is a bit. And we've also been selling a Longy special with we're donating, you know, a quarter of that to, I don't know what charity was. I think it was for the rehabilitation of horses that break their legs or something.
Yeah, well, it's a good idea. I mean, admittedly, disappointing that the Shetland didn't do a poo, but I think we can all relate to not wanting to do a poo while heaps of people are watching you, right?
Yeah. We actually have one of your representatives here. Your predecessor, Lynn, actually bought a square.
Oh, the doctor. Yeah, right.
The doctor becomes the veterinarian.
Pardon?
That's okay. How's he doing?
He's doing all right.
Oh, good.
He actually just left, so I think he was a bit rusty.
We'll send him our love out the door as he's leaving. See you, Jack. Thanks for chatting to us.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
And the guy you're about to hear from is someone you may know as the host of The Soup or as Jeff Winger from Community. It's Joel McHale. How are you going?
I am going well. How are you?
Great. Welcome to Australia. You had a hell of an entrance by attending the Melbourne Cup on Tuesday.
Yeah. When I was here 6 years ago, I came on Anzac Day, and then I arrived on Melbourne Cup Day. And so my perception is that most Australians are drunk all day long.
Yeah, did you see some really messed up stuff?
Well, other than the hats, yeah, it was interesting to see the hats droop over the course of the day.
What's the deal when you're like when you're a guest at the Melbourne Cup? Do you have to hang out with Melissa Rivers, Joan Rivers' daughter, and people like the
It was sponsored by E, so there was a number of E talent there, and they chain us together, and we're like a chain gang. We move about as a blob. So yes, we were with each other most of the time, but there was a bunch of other people there, and just quietly getting wasted.
Mm. Are you doing anything here for The Soup?
Well, I'm doing a stand-up show tomorrow night in Sydney. But no, I'm dedicating a number of statues. I'm opening a school for Soup hosts. I'm digging some latrines for no reason where they're not needed at all. And I'm teaching some people proper hygiene. And they don't know it yet, but it's going to be an assault.
Yeah, wow. So you must watch a lot of TV for The Soup. What's the worst show you reckon you've seen?
That's a difficult question because there have been so many bad shows or good shows for us because it's hard for me to call them bad since they've literally made me money. But there have been ones over the years that have been pretty dramatic in how kind of shocking they were, such as like Whitney Houston's Being Bobby Brown show. That was rough.
I don't think that made it here. What was that about?
Well, it was supposed to be about Bobby Brown, but it really became about Whitney Houston, since in America she was a national treasure, and an international superstar, and it was her and Bobby just kind of high all the time and screaming at each other. That was a real show.
Wow.
Was that not entertaining, though?
Was it? Well, much like a car accident, yes, you want to look.
Okay, yeah. That sounds like most reality TV.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is, there's so many shows that are set up for disasters. But then, you know, like you had the Tyra Banks talk show on for years, and that provided us with millions of minutes of, I mean, it was great for us. And she brought it on, you know, she constantly brought things down on herself. So we illuminated that.
It's amazing. Like I love The Soup. I'm sure lots of people listening do too. But does it ever make you despair? Does it ever get to a point where you've watched so much shit TV? You're like, like what's happening to this world?
Well, thankfully, I now have interns and there's people that work on The Soup where I probably would have ended it all long ago. But we've always said like 90% of all art or any entertainment is really bad, is crap. But 10% has never been better. So if you want to make yourself feel better, you go like, oh, that's right. Mad Men was a series that was terrific. And Game of Thrones is on. And you have, so there is light with all the, darkness.
And we are joined on the phone by Joel McHale, who you would know as a host of The Soup, or you might know him as Jeff Winger from Community. He's in the country just doing a one-off show at Sydney's Theatre Royal tomorrow night. But we mentioned before, Joel, that you are going to be on what is probably the most exciting thing that ever happened to me next year, the revival of The X-Files.
Yes. When I got the call from Chris Carter, I thought it was a joke and thought it was a very good way to fool me and make me cry. But it wasn't. He wanted me in it, and I said, okay, you want people to watch the show, right? And he went, yeah. I went, okay. Believe me, I couldn't be more thrilled to be on it. And it was as much fun as I've ever had shooting something. And I could not believe that I was looking at David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson and going, Scully, Mulder, let's go. It was really weird.
What is your character? Do you work with them in the show?
I believe my character is a conservative radio and talk show host, a chat show host, and he believes everything that Mulder believes, but he has made millions of dollars off of it.
Oh.
As opposed to Mulder, whose life is falling apart.
Wow.
Yeah, right. Do you?
Other than that, I kill everyone in the world and I'm an alien.
Yes, finally. They finally sort that out.
Do you have a love affair with Gillian Anderson?
Just all the sex scenes.
Mm, great.
Oh, all right.
I'm in scenes with, most of my scenes are with both of them.
Yeah, I could talk about this all day, but we probably should move on.
Well, let's go. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, all right.
You might lose your job.
Let's set a record. Well, one thing that I loved watching you do was hosting the White House Correspondents' Dinner last year.
Oh, thank you.
Which, for those who don't know, is like a big sort of event where they get a lot of the press together and all the politicians in Washington and basically get someone to just make jokes about everyone. And I can't believe how you opened. You were sitting right next to President Obama, and this was one of the jokes you opened with.
How about the president's performance tonight, everyone? It's amazing that you can still bring it with fresh, hilarious material. And my my favorite bit of yours was when you said you'd close the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay. That was a classic. That was hilarious, hilarious. Still going.
You can just hear the air just disappearing from the room. How did he respond to that?
Well, there's some weird line you have to walk where they go, oh, he went too far or he didn't do enough.
Yeah.
And my philosophy is just to go for it and to go after them. But more so, the jokes in my mind had to be funny. It was the most bizarre gig of my life. And I still look back on it as I can't believe it happened. And I've never been nervous again. I burned out that fuse in my brain.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And finally, Joel McHale, what's happening with Community? You had the season on Yahoo. Is it coming back?
I don't in a traditional, they picked it up for 13 type thing, but I think in some way, sometime, I believe we will do a movie at some point, and maybe like the X-Files will do 4 or 6 episodes or something like that. But I don't doubt that it will come back somehow.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Joel McHale, thank you so much for chatting to us. And yeah, if you are in Sydney, you can catch Joel McHale at the Theatre Royal tomorrow night. Thanks for chatting to us.
Thank you so much for having me. And please keep watching The Soup.
Yeah. We will.
Right on.
On Triple J, at the top you heard Slum Sociable All Night, and right there, Emma Louise with Freedom, who I understand we're going to be hearing new music from pretty soon, which is exciting, but her Instagram has been very entertaining, as it always is. If you don't follow her, you definitely should. It gets pretty crazy on her Instagram. And of the last couple of days has been really weird. Her latest post said, putting plaster in your hair is more permanent than I thought. Does anyone know how to get it out of my hair? Please help. And the photo of her. So the first photo was of her like, oh, this isn't so bad, with plaster all through her hair. Like not just a tiny bit, not like she's put it in a tiny bit of her hair, like an entire skull cap.
Was it a Halloween thing?
I believe. I'm not 100%, but I believe so.
So fully plaster hair, like painted or something, is like a new, not like a wig, a plaster wig.
Yeah, a plaster wig, essentially. And then the next photo was like, oh, no, I'm serious, guys. And then the next one is like a teary-eyed photo of her going, I'm serious, can anyone help me? I ended up just looking up out of interest if it was possible to get plaster out of your hair. And this one website was like, the ways that you have to do it is if you've got long hair, you can kind of hammer it off.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds brutal, like, and time-consuming.
Yeah, and then if it's just on short hair, you have to tweezer it out one by one. Oh. And then there's like multiple times where you have to get your hair wet and then try to soak the plaster and pull it out.
Oh. But
she's really worried, I think. And I'm really worried for her.
Me too. I feel like this could end up as just a let's get rid of it all scenario.
And it's definitely the worst case of like a Halloween costume going wrong. Like when you didn't expect that it could possibly happen.
Oh, I've never had a situation where I've never committed that much to a costume, I don't think, where it could have gone wrong.
Permanent texture is like a moustache or whatever. It's like you're dressing up as Mario Brothers or something, and then the next day at work you're like, yes, I still have a moustache.
Have you?
No, definitely not. 0439757555 though, if you have been in a worse scenario, we can make Emma Louise feel a little bit better.
Olivia, your friend had a similar situation, a costume that stuck with her for a while.
Yeah, a few years back we had a zoo party for her birthday and she decided to use house paint to paint her arms and legs a giraffe.
Oh, house paint.
Yeah.
And so what happens when you put house paint on you?
Yeah, it's kind of permanent. It doesn't come off.
Oh, I mean, it's a good ad for house paint, but bad news for your friend. How long did it last?
A couple of weeks. It was actually when we were at school and she had to come to school looking like that.
Oh, no.
Was it, like, weather resistant? Did you stand out in the rain and go, yep, no, it's not coming off?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really bad news. Thanks, Olivia. And Will from Eltham, what did you have stuck on you for a long time?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I've had blue paint stuck on me as early as this year. I dressed up as a Smurf and went to a 21st.
Yeah.
That stuck around in all nooks and crannies for about a week.
There's something about blue, isn't there? Because we had
colour.
Sam Campbell on. He had painted himself blue, stuck around for ages. Veronica and I once did a thing for a TV show where we painted it, both of ourselves entirely blue, and it was there for weeks.
Yeah, it's bad news.
No, it doesn't go anywhere.
And so what happened? It was just left on you for ages?
Yeah, so it's still all throughout my car now. And, yeah, it's just... went to work and people are saying, why have you got blue behind your ear and whatnot? So, no, it definitely sticks around, as you guys know.
But you've also had stuff stuck in your hair forever.
Yeah, I've had a plaster adhesive fall down off the roof when I was doing some plastering. And because I have dreadlocks, it just stuck in there and hardened up. So that stayed there for a few months. And I've also had blue and green plumbing glue stuck throughout my hair as well.
But this isn't costume related. This is just you being not very good at keeping glue off you.
Yeah, this is just me being fun, pretty much.
Oh, thanks, Will.
No dramas. Take care, guys.
And you are about to hear from a man who has hosted a TV show in Egypt called Al Bernameg. It was viewed by 30 million people each week. His name is Bassem Youssef. He's an Egyptian satirist here for a one-off live show. Welcome to Triple J.
This is the live show.
Yeah.
I'm giving the impression that we have live audience.
Yeah.
I'm used to that. I'm just like used, you know, I miss that, so I kind of like try to get that feeling again every time I'm on
the
show.
We'll applaud.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Jokes. Thank you. It's good for my ego.
So you hosted a show called Al Bernameg, which was very critical of Egypt's rulers. The show was watched, as Lewis said, by millions of people each week. Can you tell us how it started?
Basically, I was in the square and like during the revolution, and I saw how the media treated the revolution as not as a real revolution, but as a conspiracy. Everybody was conspiring against us, and it's kind of like if there's one word to describe what was happening, it's kind of as if you're watching Fox News, and and yes, I blame you guys for Rupert Murdoch. And
fair enough. Yeah, that's on us.
So I wanted to come back and do something to expose the hypocrisy and the. And the deceit that was being pushed through the propaganda. And so I did YouTube videos. And then I was expecting maybe 10,000 views. And had 5 million in a couple of months. And it was amazing. And I was a heart surgeon. I was ready to leave and go to Cleveland. And then just like by the third episode, I was having TV networks coming to talk to me to get me on television. So I chose that, and I became a sellout for my profession.
So how long ago was that, though, that you did the
2011.
YouTube? Okay. Mm. Oh, gosh, not that long ago.
It's And so when TV networks did come to speak to you?
Just by the third, like by the second week, basically.
Which is incredible. And like, I know that people, you get a comparison, the Jon Stewart of Egypt.
Which is an honor.
A lot. Well, and he calls himself the Bassem Youssef of America.
He is too humble.
But when TV networks first came to you, were they nervous at all about the sort of comedy that you did?
Yeah, well, first of all, I was an unknown, so I was untested. Basically, at that time, they were worried about their investment. Will I recoup their investment or not? And we did well in the first year, but in the second year, I decided that I want to do it in a theater, in a live show. And that was the biggest risk ever. Nobody wanted to do that. And we had to borrow money, and we had to push it, and everybody laughed at us and said, like, you're not going to do it. And then this is where the millions of viewers just came in, because this was something that was never seen before on Arab television. This is where we made history. It was just like an amazing experience.
So the show was shut down though last year. Do you think it has a future?
Well, the thing is, I am offered to do this show from outside, but like I made a decision not to make it from outside the country, because that you lose the credibility. It's like, oh, where you get your funding? You're doing from outside. You're not here with us. This show like belongs to the heart of Cairo. And the fact that this show is shut down is not something against me. It's something against the people who shut it down. So basically, it has a future if things turn around. And yeah. I don't know when will that happen.
If there are political changes. Does that look likely?
I don't know. I took a decision 2 years ago to stop predicting everything, because everything that I predicted was wrong. So it is a very unstable political life in the Middle East. Like, I mean, I know that everything that you hear about the Middle East is terrifying and it's disturbing, and it's true. Yeah.
Just accurate.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah.
And in the studio, we have with us Bassem Youssef, who's an Egyptian satirist and columnist, often called the Jon Stewart of Egypt. And Jon Stewart came on your show a few years ago and spoke very fondly of you and what you're doing.
He is showing that satire can still be relevant, that it can carve out space in a country for people to express themselves, because that's all democracy is the ability to express yourself and be heard. You won't always win. But you can't confuse tyranny with losing elections. It's just the opportunity to be heard and for the majority to respect the minority, whatever they may say.
What was it like meeting Jon Stewart for the very first time?
Do you know the feeling of a groupie that when they meet their favorite rock band? I was never a groupie. I was never a fan of rock band. But I felt I had the same feeling when I met him. I was like, oh my God, he's here. And I can answer, like, how was Jon Stewart like? He is one of the most genuine persons you can ever meet. You know, you have a lot of these celebrities who, like, you know, they're known and they're people like them on television, but they're basically like jerks off screen. But no, he is actually funnier. He is more genuine. He's a real person. He's a real human. I mean, he's an amazing person. And I consider him as a big brother. He was there every step of the way. He always gave me advice. And he was also always an inspiration.
Since the gap that you've left, have you noticed that there's been any kind of new generation of comedians using things like YouTube and using online things to do the kind of stuff that you were doing?
Not on mainstream media, though. Mm. Now, social media has just taken a life of its own. And and they are trying to find that space for them. None of them has actually went to become too big on social media, but at least it's a place where people go and vent, and they talk about their frustrations. So at least we feel that we have something to do with that, because in 2011 when we started, there was absolutely no original content on YouTube for Arab original content on YouTube. We're the first ones. So for us, that was a big thing. We were the first. And yes, we're off the air now, but you feel that the story continues through other people, which is okay. It's good.
It must be hard, like with your show, for instance. Like, there was a time when your arrest was ordered.
Yes, that's during the Muslim Brotherhood era. And it was ordered. Thank God I didn't actually go to jail, but I was questioned for 6 hours. And the worst thing that can happen for you as a comedian is that people would ask you about your jokes. So they would ask you about the jokes, like, and then you explain it to them, and then they ask you, why is that funny? And that would be the biggest insult that everybody would give you.
Is that essentially what was happening for that 6 hours?
Yeah. It's like, why did you say this? And then the thing is, the guy who was investigating me was kind of like, he has a very straight, like, long face, and the people around him in the room was really laughing because they know the show and they were fans of the show, and the people are taking pictures with me. So it's just like a surreal thing.
Does that sort of thing frighten you though, or
at the time no, it's just like, I think in hindsight I look at that at these times and say, like, how did I pass through that? But at that time I didn't let that fear kind of cripple me, because it's important to get to be focused on your work, because at the end of the day, if you do a bad show, nobody will make an excuse. It's like, oh, he was under a lot of pressure. So at the end of the day, you have actually to perform and do well in your show.
Yeah. And do you have plans to go back to Egypt now? What's the situation there?
Let's say I enjoy where I am right now.
Okay. Yes. Sure.
Because you're living in Abu Dhabi?
I live in Dubai.
Dubai, yeah.
Yeah, I'm between Dubai and the United States. I'm kind of like living half of my life in planes.
And so what's happening comedy-wise then for you?
I am kind of mentoring young people on the internet. I'm helping people to get like on the digital space and give them the same chance that I was giving. So most of my work now is behind the scenes, because the offers that I have now are like comedy, but they're like stupid entertainment, empty comedy gigs, and I don't want that. You know, you need to respect the legacy that that we have made.
Yeah, I guess you could just be like most comedians, and you know, when work dries up, you just do part-time heart surgery.
Yeah, exactly. It's always there. I'll open up. I'll open you up right now. I still have it.
Thank you. I'll see if there's one in there. Bassem Youssef, thank you so much for coming in. You're doing a one-off lecture. It's the Chasers' 16th inaugural lecture at the Sydney Town Hall this Monday on the 9th of November. If you want to see Bassem, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Veronica, Lewis, Triple J.